All right.
We're all here tonight. It's good to see so many faces out there. Since we always start the meeting with a prayer, and Kimsey is going to do that for us.
I invite you to pray with me. Father God in heaven, we appreciate you, and we come to you tonight with grateful hearts. We love you, and we ask that you would guide and direct this group, that we would do as you would have us do, and that we remember that always we're under your care. Father, I just thank you for all the many blessings I have, and I ask that you would continue to bless each and every one of us. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you. Bob, if you do the part.
At each meeting, we pledge allegiance to the United States flag. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
All right, next we have public comment for about 15 minutes. As much as needed, usually. You're limited to 3 minutes. Would anybody like to say anything at this time?
Yeah, I'll start out. Mark Tooley. I sit in one of these seats. Bob asked me if I came here to harangue you, and I did not. I came here to encourage you.
It's good to see you.
I was a member of the stakeholder group for the comprehensive bike plan, representing the Transylvania Transportation Advisory Committee. The process was very broad. We held, I think, at least 4 public meetings before the plan was written and 4 after the plan was written. So we've got a good cross section of the county to come out and let their views be known. Some for, some against bikes, but mostly it was a good conversation. As well as being a standalone plan, this plan will also fold into what just started, which is the comprehensive transportation plan, block plans for the county. But this will help fill out that bike and pedestrian portion of that plan. Whether we like it or not, Transylvania County has become a destination for bikers, and I think this plan will help guide how we plan and accommodate those bikers in the future. Biking's part of our tourism economy. It's becoming more and more important. I think probably tourism is our leading economic sector right now. And we need to do as much as we can to become more of a bike-friendly community than we are now. We're good, but I think we can do better. Having a plan, too, will allow us to apply the green powers in the future to fill out portions of it as we do that. And it'll also allow us to work with the DOT to incorporate bike amenities into road projects as we go forward. This bike plan is very complementary, fits well with the county's comprehensive plan, which was just finished up a year or two ago. There are several references in the comprehensive plan to biking. One of them is, quote, the development of bike lanes, trails, and pull-offs to help minimize the danger on the road between bikes and motor vehicles, unquote, and also to help in the development of infrastructure and education support safe biking. And this plan will help do that. So we've had broad input from citizens. Biking and associated activities support our economy, and it supports our 2025 comprehensive plan. So I just encourage you to vote to adopt it, and or vote to have the Board of Commissioners adopt it later. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anybody else like to speak at this time?
John Wayne Harrison, and I have a couple. I only have two copies of this, so which is good. I think that I can hand these to you. And then, is this right over here?
Yeah, that's fine.
And I'll say, last month when I was here, first of all, I want to say thanks for your time of serving on this board. I really appreciate it. When I was here last, I heard basically two concerns from you guys. One was, how does it stimulate our economy? You know, is it worth it? And then the other one was a safety thing. I think most of you voiced some concerns of safety of bikes on the road. The first one I think is pretty easy. This, I feel like this plan, one of the biggest things of it is to address the safety on the road. So I think we would be, without maybe using not the correct term, kind of foolish not to push it forward, because I think that's the whole purpose of it. That's what I understand, is for it to help address the safety of bikes on the road. As far as the economic part, the impact that it has, the one thing that I handed out, I know y'all haven't had a chance to look, and or maybe you've seen this economic impact study, but I'll tell you real quick some highlights of it. They, Brevard College did this. They did it again this year, but that information is not out yet since the race just happened on Saturday. Brevard College did this. They interviewed 197 people. So starting on like page 19 of this, 1.86 non-participants per rider. So that's pretty staggering. On page 19, in my opinion, it's 1,800 non-participants showed up with this event. So it shows that it's not just a bike rider that's coming to Transylvania County to ride in the race and then turn around and come home. They're bringing kids, they're bringing wives with them, and they're doing things while they're here. If you flip over to page 20, it shows where they all stayed. Page 22 was from this study of 197 people. The economic impact was $200,000 from riders and $85,000 from non-participants, which I think is pretty impressive. There's a lot of other cool data in there that you guys can look through. The other sheet that I have that just has like year, gross, cost, net, and grants, there's a couple of cool things to look at on that. And if you look at most of the growth of the gross money that came in from the Assault in the Carolinas starting in 2002, it just kind of gradually goes up and gradually goes up until 2011. And that's when it went from the high school to downtown Brevard. And then you can see the growth, there, 32,000, 51, 71, 90, 100. And then this year, it was 134,000. I talked to Jay Cohen at the with the Visit Force Rotary. He said they spent a little over $60,000 this year locally. He said that the percentage of their cost, if you look back over the years, $378,000. He said 30% of that is spent locally on music, entertainment, giveaways, shirts that are created by local screen printing companies here. Bands this year were local bands. Food that they feed are local people. I know they gave socks away in the bags this year. Water bottles that were purchased locally. So it's a pretty big economic stimulant. And this is one example. One other one that I would give is Dale's Pell Ale, Oscar Blues. Dale Katechis is, he came to this area for one reason. And that was like, I feel like that brewery and that business has done a lot, and it still does a lot for our, for our community, and brings a lot of events, brings a lot of people here. I know when I have friends come in town, they want to go there. So, and that's, and he's here simply because he came and biked here. He had a friend here. He kept a bike at their house, and he would fly in town and mountain bike here, and then he would fly back up to Colorado and finally said, "Why not do this while I'm running some business here as well, and come and play and work where I love being." Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. If you don't mind me asking, how did the students go about collecting this data? What is it, what was their scientific procedures, statistical procedures? And how do they know these numbers are right, is basically what I'm asking.
So they just, after the race was over, they just walked up to people and randomly said, you know, "Hey, can I, we're doing an economic impact study, do you mind if I ask you some questions?" And I think people were, all of that is in there. I personally wasn't involved in this, so I can't answer that any more than what's here. I know they did a study again this year, so maybe if you guys wanted to look at this year's study, this was done in 2013, so I think the people that actually did this and were involved, we probably couldn't personally question them, unless somebody from the college knows they stuck around and are still here. But I'm sure that the people that did the study this year, we could ask them personally, you know, how did you, you know, did you try to reach across a diversity of ages? Did you ask, you know, did you pick out people that were in common riding clothes or only in, you know, they looked like they were in sponsored, you know, jerseys? I don't know. I would like to think that the college did a fairly non-biased.
What are some of the costs?
Some of
the costs
for the Rotary Club?
Well, you got your cost column here. That, in other words, who is paying for what to sponsor all this? I mean, what are they paying for?
Gosh, I wish I would have written this down better. Did anybody in your part of the Rotary Club?
What are you asking?
In other words, these costs right here. In other words, somebody's paying the cost to have these gross revenues coming in.
The riders have to pay the fee. And then the fee before, I used to be a Rotarian, so I speak to this a little bit, but not a whole lot, because I was not allowed in the fee before. But the riders pay a fee, and I don't remember how much that is. And then they go out and get sponsorships from various people. And
I thought you were asking where this money comes from. The cost column, I thought you were saying how much they spend on food, how much they spend on giveaway shirts. I'm sorry. Yes, every rider that participates pays an entry fee to participate in the ride, and then the Pisgah Forest Rotary Club also reaches out in the local community to get sponsorships. I guess we're all sponsored. The hub. Places like that sponsor.
Right. There was a picture in the paper, and I don't remember some of the sponsorships, but there were some pretty good sized companies that sponsored. The last time I was involved in anything about it, they were in about $50,000 range, and of course that's increased tremendously.
Sitting on the sponsorships, yeah.
I did have a question about the accommodations. I forget what the figure was now, but I don't know how the majority of them stayed in.
All right, it said 72% of riders stayed. Surveyed spent Friday night in Pennsylvania County.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was on page 19.
I think it's 20. It's 19.
I didn't know we had that many places to stay in the county.
Well, we're the leading county in the state. We are the leading county in the state for short-term rentals. We have more short-term rentals in Pennsylvania County than almost anywhere else in the entire state.
Where do they stay?
VRBO and Airbnbs, the hotels, Pilot Cove, cabins, campgrounds. We don't have enough space.
The Red House Inn.
We only have three motels.
Yeah, but there's a lot of private homes and things.
So they stay in private homes, or
which is our tax as well. There's hospitality taxes on all this.
That's interesting.
So the revenue producing as well, all those homes that stay. I know.
Only 40% of them stay in motels.
No, it's not. 40% of what they surveyed stayed in a hotel.
Yeah.
I don't know that this said in this county. The pie chart right there, I don't know that it said in this county.
Well, I'm not opposed to it because the money that stays in it, it does stay in the county. The Rotary Club does a lot of good things in this county.
Yes, sir.
And whatnot. I'm just shaky about some of the figures.
Yeah.
Of where people stay and whatnot.
Right.
It's a good thing.
Well, I feel like regardless of those, I don't think there is a bed and breakfast with an available room, a hotel with available room, a VRBO that's vacant, a biker who has friends who has a bed that's open on that weekend of the Solomon Carolinas. And, I mean, I definitely think that they fill up everything they can on that weekend.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Hello, my name is John Patillo. I'm here to ask for your support for the county bike plan. I'm a full-time resident of Transylvania County and live in Conestoga Falls. I'm also the founder and the ride meter of the Conestoga Falls Cycling Club, and it's in that capacity that I'll focus my comments. Conestoga Falls Cycling Club was formed about 2 years ago, and we currently have about 60 people on our email distribution list. That may make us the largest cycling group in the county. I mean, there's a lot of cyclists here, but that may make us the largest indigenous group. As you can guess, our members are older, but very active, and often suffering from 60-plus years of wear and tear. So we're not the hard chargers we used to be. As we've gotten older, our list of acceptable activities has gotten shorter and shorter. And many of them, like me, have given up on high-impact activities like basketball and beach volleyball and whatnot, and are now limited to basically walking, swimming, and cycling, which that's what's on my list. For most of us, for many of the people on the list, mountain biking is no longer a possibility. The trails are just too severe, and the risk of injury is just too great. Of the 60 cyclists that we have on our list, about 20 of them are willing to ride on roads. The rest of them will not because of safety concerns. They may ride periodically on the Brevard Area Trail or participate whenever our rides take us down to the Swamp Rabbit or the Doodle Trail down in Pickens. I'd just like to add, when we do that, it's usually a large group, and we have a tendency to take the whole day and eat, we drink, we shop, basically spend our money somewhere else, which is a shame. All of those people are interested in using cycling to maintain and improve their health, but they're just uncomfortable with the current cycling infrastructure in our county. As a result, many of the cyclists enthusiastically participated in the public input meetings with Bike Plan, hoping to facilitate some change here. As the recent Transylvania County demographics study showed, the county population is getting older. I like to believe that our club is representative of that aging population, and they would like to see improved county cycling infrastructure, including shoulders along our most popular road routes, expansion of the current paths, and development of multi-use paths, specifically the development of the Acosta Trail, which shows up number one on everybody's survey. So in closing, I'd just like to say we support the bike plan and recommend its adoption to our board of commissioners. Thank you.
Hey, you guys can hear. I'm Sam Salad. I'm the owner of the Hub. I'm the agent support there at the bike shop. And been here a long, long time. I went to Brevard College. I have children in the school system here and kind of going on, you know, a whole different level of operating business that was started out of bicycles. This plan is a very broad plan, and it's covering everything from DOT, right-of-ways, easements, to bike paths and everything. The past few years, I spent most of my summers and my winters traveling with my family and looking at other towns out west and in the northeast. I have family in Georgia, these things, and we are being left behind quickly by pedestrian infrastructure. I'm also involved in commercial development with some partners, and the number one thing in towns and in areas right now is pedestrian infrastructure. Bike, hike, multi-use path. Families, we live in this amazing temperate climate. People want to be outside more than they want to be inside. And when it's not safe to even find your way to an elementary school or middle school, it turns families away from this area. We see hundreds of thousands of tourists come through our shop every year and ask about housing and business and how do they get here, how do they do that? Can you walk to the school? Can you ride your bikes to the school? Is there a safe place for us to come rent your mountain bikes and go ride? You know, and there's not, they can't leave our store and get on the bike path. They can't leave any bike shop and get on the bike path. It's a problem, and it's deterring people away. They're going to Hendersonville. They're going to down to Traveler's Rest or Nashville, where this is all growing fast and quickly and moving through local government, you know, with support. It's becoming a problem, and I see it. You know, with my own child, I have a hard time going to ride places when you're trying to take the bike path and you're afraid of getting hit by people for gas stations and restaurants there. If we want to keep up and we want to increase school numbers and we want to increase tax and we want to attract industry, light industry, to come back, we have to have that infrastructure, that pedestrian infrastructure, because that's what the families and the people, when they relocate, they want that right now. That's the modern thing. And it's not a trend. It's actually what exists. I have developments in Georgia and South Carolina in place right now, and we're building a $1 billion neighborhood that is around bike path, canoe access, and bike trails that are going to be maintained. And this is being, you know, pre-sold at an incredible rate because of being able to access and have family places to enjoy. You know, from a business standpoint with our bike shop, and you know, it's an unbelievable industry. Bicycles is one of the fastest growing outdoor industries in the world. Sales in the United States. And you look at the town of Bentonville, Arizona, the Walmart brothers have put almost a couple $100 million into trail systems, and they're on the map huge now. All of the major bicycle industries and stuff, people are opening facilities there, factories there. They're moving to these places that support this infrastructure. You know, I wouldn't have come here, and my family wouldn't have moved here. I came before college over 15, 16 years ago, and we have 16 employees who have families and are all living wage. It's a true industry, and a lot of them want to be here, but, you know, we need to help provide an appealing place for them, and we need to provide safe routes of travel for people to commute to their job or to, you know, be safe. This plan isn't necessarily, you know, said, hey, as soon as we initiate it, it's done. It's said it's going to happen. This is just a progress and a framework for what's possible. And, you know, there's nothing that's negative saying, hey, we're going to pass this on to the next level, you know, for the committee to vote on. There's nothing in there that's, you know, saying we put the gavel down and it's done. So this is literally just awesome framework that people spend a lot of time developing. That's going to have great potential. So, you know, answer any questions for you, but you understand that this is just an awesome opportunity to provide possible avenues for safe travel, you know, safe places for exercise, healthy lifestyles. Take a look at Traveler's Rest. I go down there for soccer games with my son. He plays in tournaments every once in a while. You can't drive or ride around there without seeing 100 plus people at any given point crossing paths on the path, losing weight, being healthy. You know, it's not just for road bikers zooming back and forth. It's for people to walk on, for people to ride their scooters, rollerblade, for families. You know, a safe place for families. Because there's no safe place for families to rent a bicycle or bring a bicycle here to ride. You can say, hey, that little space in the forest on Estico Trail, and we already know that's packed, and it causes conflict, because that's the only safe place we have so far. So whether we get some shoulders, we get separated bike lanes, we work on some of these priorities, it's going to be huge. And it's going to be great for the community, and it's going to really alleviate safety issues, and it's going to really increase, you know, taxes in the city and sales taxes. I know that our business has been 15 to 20% up for over 10 years in a row. That's a lot of sales tax going back to this county, and it's only going to continue because we're going to be drawing in more and more hotels and accommodation taxes, and those are going to fill up. Assault Lake Carolinas is one weekend. There are almost over 50 races on every weekend throughout spring and fall. There's a bicycle race you probably don't know about, but it's happening in the forest, it's happening here, and they're all booked out. Pilot Cove Campground, they've put over $10 million into that so far. It accommodates cyclists. Trek Travel is a company from out of state who books it almost every other weekday just for these groups of cyclists that come in, stay, and then they move on. So you don't even see it necessarily, because if you look at the bike path driving by, who matters, where you want to see it, just because you don't see people right there 24/7, it doesn't mean the rest of the path isn't packed, because it is often. Thank you, and I really hope that, you know, from this point, this is an easy shoe-in just to get to the next level and, you know, continue the conversation.
There are several different sets of demographics associated with this.
Yep.
There's the local people that live here
out of
all age groups.
Yep.
There's the people that come to ride here.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think, and I'm not saying that I'm, you know, opposed to this or anything like this, but I do not believe that the bike plan alone is going to bring tons of people into Transylvania County to live, because there's no jobs here for those people.
Absolutely. The bike plan is a framework for hopeful progress the county can make. The county, DOT, the city. The city is very much right now behind pedestrian infrastructure. And this plan is the framework for pedestrian infrastructure, including bikes. Those multi-use paths, the bike lane, those are for walking, those are for everything else. So by having pedestrian infrastructure, you are taking off one checklist on families, people, having a family and children, and I have a, you know, we're always looking for a vacation place to go to. That's one of the key things we want to see when we go somewhere, is that when we get there, we can, if we're staying in a hotel, maybe we don't even need to rent a car. Maybe we can go from that hotel and we can ride to the local restaurants and ride to the trails. Or we have somewhere to walk at, you know, a nice place to get some exercise in an afternoon. It's one checklist of things that people want when they're looking for somewhere to relocate and move to.
And I would also add that it will dream light industry if we have the infrastructure. We've seen that in multiple communities. So it will actually create, it's a job creator, it's an economic stimulator. To me, that's one of the most important factors of this plan, is that we keep talking about job creation being critical in our county. I agree completely, and I think we're staring at it as a real potential opportunity that can happen and does happen in other communities. Why aren't we taking advantage of it?
Connectivity creates more opportunity for more retail business, for more lodging, and those are big, you know, those are big money makers, and they're, you have to have it to bring people in. It's just like internet, sewer, water. You can't, you know, having connectivity and good roadways and good pedestrian ways is one of those same checklists. I'm involved with some big companies that, you know, we sell bikes through things, and where they locate, it's amazing that the where they pop, like, hey, we popped in right here, we're right next to the bike path, we're by the river, we're able, our employees are super excited that they, you know, Fox, our Santa Cruz Bicycle Company, is one of our stuff, they just set up in Greenville by the bike path there, the whole East Coast warehouse for shipping and receiving, it's like 300 jobs, you know, and we're not going to get that necessarily here because we're nowhere near a highway. You know, the train systems are out of date. But we can definitely get light industry and these smaller companies. We have, I know one of the local industries in town is moving to bike products. They're going to start producing bike products as a factory. Like, that industry is good. And we can't settle on, you know, saying, hey, this is a fad or it's good. We always have to chase what is good and what is working. And in pedestrians, and walking has always been a thing, and bicycling has been a thing for, you know, nearly 1,000 years since the wheel was invented. You know, it's not going anywhere. It's only getting better. It's only getting more technological, and it's only going to follow. And if we can somewhat have at least a plan in place to adapt to, if we have to get there, that's what this is. You know, you guys saying, hey, let's pass it on to, you know, the board, let them vote on it. That's all you're doing is saying, yeah, there's a possibility this is a great idea. You're not putting anything in stone.
Bob, the Pennsylvania Economic Alliance, one of their 5 target recruitment categories is the outdoor recreation industry, and this fits right into that as well. Whether it's a bike company or a tent company or a children's sport, or
yeah, we're developing the rest of our 12, 13 acres right now, and we're trying to draw them in.
One of the problems we have, and it always comes to my mind as a concern, we don't have infrastructure to support a lot of industry that they have.
Yep.
Whatnot. So one of the concerns I always have in my mind is, are we going to spend money on bike trails that we should be spending on other things?
This is not spending money, though.
Look at our roads. Even our roads need upgrading, many of them, and changes made to them. The one upside I see to this plan is the fact that if we have a plan in place, when those roads are upgraded, that will be taken into consideration, and there will be bike facilities involved.
And that gets you up a notch in DOT's playbook and
right,
plan in place.
Also, I'm not sure that
I just fail to see that. And I'm like Bob, I'm not necessarily totally opposed to this, but I fail to see that having bike plans is going to bring a lot of people to this area for business, for building houses, for staying here. Young people, like we said, have a terrific hard time affording housing in this area. I don't know how to do it, frankly. So, two sides of the coin. But we definitely need to
good job. See on the red side.
Anybody else? Yes.
Hey. All right, my name is James Brooks. And first of all, I want to say thank you guys for taking time to really consider this and talk through. I think that one of the things that we all agree on is that nobody wants to be on a road and have bicyclists in their way. And nobody wants to be on the road and be afraid of hurting a bicyclist. And no bicyclists want to be on the road afraid of getting hit by a car. And one easy way to fix that is with a plan like this. And that's why I want you guys to adopt this plan. The plan itself is nothing to be afraid of, as far as I can tell. You know, it's like using a pony as a guard dog. It's got no bite. It's got no bark. There's nothing in here that mandates that the county has to spend any money on any infrastructure for bikes. There's no mandate in here at all. If you guys accept this, accept the plan, then in the future, when the roads are being upgraded and whatnot, there's nothing in the plan that makes it so that they have to add bikes. I wish it did. I wish it did have that bike, but it doesn't. This is the plan we've got. I know there's a lot of data in the plan that some of you guys had some disagreement with. But one piece of data that's true is that NCDOT is willing to put forth 100% of the cost for adding bikes to existing roads, or bike infrastructure to existing roads, and that's wonderful. But they're only going to do that if we've got this plan in place. And so when you guys are doing a discussion about the bicycle stuff, I want you guys to be careful to not pretend that the bike plan is something that it isn't. This is not a bike plan that is saying it's bikes versus potholes. It's not bikes versus big infrastructure. You can adopt the plan, and it's not going to take away from spending any money on those other important infrastructure issues. And so hope you guys keep that in mind when you're doing your discussion of this, and it'll be good time.
I'd like to follow up as well.
Sure, can I say one thing? Yeah, sure. Jim mentioned to me last time, which I thought was a really good point, that the discussion last month in the meeting about Wilson Road, and there was a little bit of discussion about, can we go back on Wilson Road and get a bike path on that? Can we, you know, and I think you guys, somebody informed us that no, we can't, like it's too far gone. They've already done the survey, they've already done all this. Well, that's what this bike plan, that's what I see, is that's what this bike plan is for. It doesn't say that we have to put a path in anywhere. It doesn't say we're going to put a path in and leave this pothole. But if we do get, you know, road work done, and they're going to do something like Wilson Road, this plan makes it a lot easier for us to get a bike path in if we decide as a community that we want to, because we can say, look, educated people have done a study of Wilson Road, and the best thing for Wilson Road is to add a 2-foot shoulder. It's, I don't know all of these different bike path names, but it's to add a 4-foot. You know, the best thing is
5-foot.
I don't know what the details are. I'm just saying this plan, if someone has studied it and said, oh, well, if you're talking about Island Port Road, you don't need to do a bike shoulder. We need a pullover at every half mile, and these are the best places to put these pullovers. You know, it's just that this is already progressive thinking for that. If we as a community decide to do that.
Thank you, Tim. Anybody else want to help us out here?
Well, I just have some personal stories to tell, because there's been a lot of data and facts, and I think just some personal stories are very important. So I came from a community where we used to bike everywhere. I had a trailer and took my kids everywhere. When we first moved here, I think my son was three, and my daughter was one, and we were kind of doing that off of 64. We're coming up the road. There's a nice shoulder all the way up 64. Is great. Right up the way. And as you get to the hill, you know, right there by the shooting range, by, you know, Bare Arms, you know, the median goes from about 5 foot to nothing. And I was coming up that way, and I was checking, and then there was this car that was speeding around and almost hit us right there at that intersection as we were coming up. But I biked in the town and biked my kids to school every day up to that point. You know, it was cheaper for my family for gas. It was good exercise for me. I was transporting my kids, which was awesome. You know, I didn't have to find extra time to exercise because, you know, I am a teacher and my wife is a therapist, so clearly we're very wealthy, you know. you know, we're always trying to find extra ways to make income. So adding to that, I work as, you know, a teacher, so one of my other jobs that I work at was a bartender. This last weekend because of the assault in the Carolinas, I made about as much as I make in a month teaching in that one weekend, you know, as a bartender, which was awesome for my family. And the thing that's really nice is that is a business that chose our community because of my
business. I'm sorry, what's your business?
I've already been in Oscar Blues. So I'm a teacher, is what I do mainly. But then to support my family, I have to have like 5 other jobs. So anyway, one of those is working as a bartender in Oscar Blues. And so I made about as much, you know, in a month teaching as I did in that weekend during that race. And so that really helped my family. And, you know, I work at Oscar Blues, which is a great business. I mean, it's great for my family. They offer great benefits for part-time workers, and they came here because of what our community offers as far as outdoor business. And, you know, I think adding any infrastructure will add those types of jobs for young families and help us out. I mean, I love it. I mean, I'm an extrovert, so I like parts of it. But, you know, it's been really great for my family. You know, just one other story. My wife and I, when our son was 3 months old, we traveled all the way across the country. We traveled to all the cool outdoor bike cities. And I mean, we live in Nashville, and we live in the area. So we were trying to find somewhere where we want to raise our family. We went to Bend, Oregon, and Hood River, Oregon, and Missoula, Montana, which has incredible bike infrastructure, also, by the way. We went to Salt Lake City. We went to Louisville, Kentucky. Yeah, we went to Vanderbilt. We went to all these different cities to try to decide where to raise our family. And we decided on Brevard, partially because I can bike into the forest, and I can, you know, I can drop my kids off at whatever practice they have, and then do a bike ride and come back and get them, or do a run and come back and get them. You know, the access to the forest is incredible. And I think that that, for me, is what made me choose this area. You know, and then we have to figure out how to make it work, because there are no jobs. However, you know, I think that what Sam was saying about, like, creating an infrastructure, creating a place where people would want to live, will bring jobs, you know. It'll bring the money to bring the infrastructure. It'll bring the need for that. You know, because the more opportunities that we have to bring business here, the more opportunities we'll have to have people say, hey, I'll throw a bunch of money into the community, because this is what we want, this is where we want to have our business.
We need to have amenities for people to fall in love with.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So thank you for having me.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask you, initially, knowing that it was obvious we didn't have all this, you know, infrastructure we needed for biking, but you decided to move here because of the beauty of the mountains. But there's mountains out west too. But you can ride in the forest, but you know, you guys, your group can't. So the emphasis here is on kind of the road, yeah,
well,
roads that don't have even
any
place to
park. And I would, you know, I mean, I would love my son is asking to bike to school, and I don't feel comfortable with him.
So yeah.
He's 14 now. And you know, I mean, I trust him. He's really safe on the bike, and it's not him that I don't trust. You know, and it's not really the drivers that I don't trust. It's just like, you know, if we create safe places for those two users to interact, then it's a safe place. You know, I mean, I don't know. I'm a driver. I drive a lot. I drive all over the place. I have to.
Yeah.
So just, and I know from my experience, driving on 276 coming from Tennessee, I mean, that stretch of road is really dangerous. Even when, even when I can see, and when you can't see, it's even more dangerous. You know, I've been surprised by bikers. You know? And I'm an avid biker. I look out for them. I know to be aware of them. You know, so that interaction is just dangerous in general. And the more that we can create safe interaction, you know, the less, you know, well, the safer it is for everybody. I mean,
thank you.
And the fact that the DOT is going to, you know, NCDOT is willing to, you know, put money into these projects is a win-win. I can't even see why it wouldn't be approved.
One thing I was going to say has been really touched on anyway. Everyone's done such a great job. I also would like to add my encouragement for you guys to recommend the commission to adopt this plan. And one
your,
thing,
your name?
I'm sorry. I'm Nancy DeFibo. Yes, I am. I'm a full-time resident. I've been here 18 years. I think one of the issues might be almost a semantic one, because whether or not it's your group or the commissioner group, some fear that the word adoption doesn't equal endorsement, as some of the other guys were saying. There's nothing in that plan that says, yeah, we're going to do everything in that plan. There's some pretty unfeasible things in that plan.
It does equal endorsement. We recommend this to the commission for endorsement.
But you're recommending adoption of it. That doesn't mean that the commissioners then take that plan and go, we endorse everything in this plan. They have adopted a plan, thus, like we've been saying, that is a groundwork, that is a framework for future projects. You know, some of the things that I had, you know, reviewed myself, and some of the charts that were out of the great comprehensive study that, you know, Joy and her crew worked on so long and hard on, that, you know, and like the question that said, in the next 10 years, what would you like to see most in the county? Obviously, jobs being the first one. But if you go down and look at the Acosta Trail, bike lanes and bike paths, and add them up, 21% wanted bike infrastructure. The other plan question that said road improvements and construction require many years to plan. In your opinion, what one road or improvement is needed in the next 10 years? Number one, bike plans. There was another question in the summary of the comprehensive plan that said, asking about parks and recreational facilities, what were the most important? And these are all Transylvania County people, not out of towners like us. 57% said they wanted walking, biking, greenways. And the next most important request was a 29% picnic areas or something. And then most recently, there was a survey done by the Chamber of Commerce with its membership. And the Augusta Trail was identified as a top priority for the region. So there's lots of ways that that can go. But as some other people have said, getting us ahead of the game with DOT, I think, is so important for us to adopt this plan. And I just encourage you to join Henderson County, which last week unanimously adopted their greenway plan to great fanfare and exuberation. So, anyway, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I think we're going to move on now. There's time at the end of the meeting, too, if you hear something and you want to speak, it should be fine. Approval of the agenda. Are there any updates to the agenda?
Move to adopt the agenda as presented.
Okay. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Nobody's opposed. Okay. Approval of minutes, our March minutes. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes from last month?
So moved.
Lauren? Sorry. A second? Okay. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. All right. Subdivision approvals and updates.
Since the last meeting, we have had 6 recombination of previously approved lots, 3 subdivisions where both parcels were greater than 10 acres, 2 lots that were divided because they were inherited by will. It may have been the exact same plat, actually. There was just the total acreage was wrong. It was an error by the surveyor. And so we had to review it twice as review officers. And then there was one that was a review only that created a new easement. And so as review officers, when a new easement is put into place, we review it to ensure that it meets the secretary standards. So that is what we have seen since the last planning board meeting, which was more recent than usual. Okay. Any questions?
Mm-hmm.
Do we need a motion?
No. Okay, old business. Transylvania bike plan. Consider recommendation for the commissioners. Where should we go with this?
You know, this entire bike plan is a sliver of all of the different things we're trying to bring into the county to make up for the tremendous losses that we had in 2002 when 3 of the biggest industries in this county closed. We'll never be back where we were again because that tax base is absolutely gone forever. It will never come back. However, if we can bring a sliver of this in that generates a few jobs, maybe brings some housing in that people can afford to live in, and some of these people do a little manufacturing, we almost don't have any choice but to look at something like that because we've got to bring stuff into this county. Now, there is one clarification that I still fully believe in on this, and that is that most of this bike plan at present will be for the local people. And the people who come into this county will benefit from this bike plan. There will be income coming in. There will be tax base. There will be what we call hotel occupancy taxes and so forth like that. I'm not 100% convinced that any bike plan ever made is just going to bring people into a community to come joyfully live, because we have no housing that people can afford here, and we still don't have employment for these people. So if they come here to live and enjoy these magnificent bike facilities that we're talking about over the next 10 or 15 years in this plan, they're still going to be working outside the county. Mm-hmm. And that's reality. Look at how many people work down at the car manufacturing plant in Greenville, for example, that lost their jobs at Acosta and Newmont. It is what it is. Sandy, I can't go against this plan because the plan is so common sense and it's safety-minded, mm-hmm. and DOT is willing to help out, and it will bring something into the county. And I guess that's where I am on this thing. I know that down the road, this bicycle plan is also going to be integrated into the river trail system that exists in the county, which I actually helped put some of that in when I was still with NRCS. We found the sites to put the some of these river campgrounds in, and also besides that, it'll deal with, you know, the health issues and so forth in the county. So I guess that being said, I'm not going to make a motion just yet, but I mean, I think that's where we are on this. It has its good points. The big thing, and there will likely be some serious debate on this, everybody's in favor of the rails to trails. Nobody has said anything yet about the landowners that trail is going to go through their front yards. Yeah. And those people have rights also. Not just because people want to get on a trail and ride a bicycle or run or jog or whatever. There's going to have to be some very, very careful consideration on things like that, because they're landowners and taxpayers that were here before the people coming in to ride bicycles. So, you know, and I'm thinking that we'll have a common sense approach on all of that. I think the folks that have worked on this tremendous bicycle plan and all that ought to be commended, because that was no easy document to put together. You know about it. You know what went into all of that and all. And I just want folks to realize that this board has looked over and looked over and looked over this thing, fine-tuning it with comments from the public. Right, Joy? Tremendous amount of comments from the public and other legislative groups in this county. So, I guess I just wanted to state that's where I stand on this, but I don't think it's a bad thing. I regret that we have to do things like this because we can't get other industry in this county. And we have nothing to offer industry. There's nothing here. We have no infrastructure, we have no county water supply, we have no county sewer supply. We're joining the high ranks of the people that are jumping on the bandwagon and getting in first on bicycling, which I think is a good thing. But what are we doing for the rest of the industry?
I feel like Bob does. I feel that the amount of work that has gone into this plan, and I feel it's absolutely a necessity at this time to have a plan. It's already here. I mean, the bikes are here. The biking is, I guess, our biggest industry now. And the people who have come here and created the businesses to support this are making... They're making money. It's an economic boom. For me, it's allowing families to exercise together. I'm not so green oriented. It's just having the space, having safe space, providing. And I kind of feel like right now, it's the roads where the bikers are that need to be addressed. And so when DOT gets around to doing something, we have a plan and we can talk to them. We can communicate and we can have, because it's a decision. what is needed, you know, and every road is going to be different. So,
I'm in favor. Question, I forget exactly, but if the DOT improves along the highway and we have a bike lane, doesn't the county pay some of that cost?
Yes.
It's not 100% funded by the state. Regardless of who funds it, it's going to come out of our pockets eventually.
If it's in conjunction with improving the roads, the county pays 30% of the cost of the construction materials.
Right.
So not the grading and not the easement, but the construction materials.
Yeah, that's what I remembered, but I wanted to get it out of people.
At the Transportation Advisory Committee meeting on Tuesday, we heard that North Carolina has to spend 4% of the budget that they get from the federal government on alternative transportation projects. 4%. And so far, that has been competing statewide. But with the new criteria for the next round of road project prioritization, they'll be competing within a division for that 4% that goes towards alternative transportation. And so by having a bike plan in place, we'll be able to access that fund.
I understand that. And that's
funding.
To me, that's the real upside of this. I got to say, I'm not totally in favor of this. And I'm not a guy that says industry will never come back to this county. There wasn't anything here when Acoustic came and did one came. But they came. What Bob says is true. Our biggest need, I think you agree on this, is probably infrastructure. We don't have any water outside of the city. We don't have any sewer outside of the city. Not an ETJ anyway. And so it's not there. I would think, frankly, I would like to see some money spent on that. I would almost hesitate to say this, that maybe there ought to be a county utility authority of some kind that can do that sort of stuff. Now, I'm not saying where I live, so you guys don't need to bring forth this
information.
You can find that, I know. But anyway, I've said this before, but I'm going to say it again. I'm a native here. I lived here when Coosa came. Coosa made this county. There's no question about it. But not. Unfortunately, I also saw it torn down. It opened doors for me that I would not have had otherwise. And it is what it is. So I believe in trying to bring some industry to the county. There wasn't any infrastructure when Acoustic came here, and they built it. Unfortunately, over the years since then, the situation is you provide the stuff for the industries that really don't know. So I think we need to take a hard look at that. I agree with Bob on most of pretty much everything he said. I'm concerned that we don't have any problem bringing people in who can spend a tremendous amount of money, but we don't have jobs and we don't have housing for younger people. The guy who's a teacher, do you live in the county? I don't know how you do it all the time. But it is what it is, and we have to face that. But I think our real problem is, number one, infrastructure, number two, affordable housing. And we don't solve those problems, I don't know what's going to come. I don't think that bikes are going to solve those problems. And one thing about the Acoustic Trail, it's a great use of somebody else's property. And on the thing. Beyond that, as Bob pointed out, there are a lot of people that have railroads in their front door. They're not going to want to have a trail in the front door. And some of the easements, some of that right of way is on easements, and it's revertible to the property owner. It will not, if they abandon the rail line, the property will revert to the property owner next to it, not some group or whatnot that wants to make. So we have a number of problems involved in it. All that being said, I don't think I can turn down the situation that when the roads are improved, if we have a plan in place, we'll get money to provide bike lanes and that sort of thing. It is what it is. If I could split the vote, I might split it 80-20 or something like that, but I can't split my vote, so.
Thanks, Benjamin.
I would say that part of the 2025 comprehensive plan, when we had the survey of the community, and as part of this bike plan survey of the community, some of the core concerns and that they addressed were economic stimulus, safety and road safety, park safety, and job creation. And this bike plan, whether it's perfect or flawed, addresses those three key components unequivocally. We can hem and haw over whether the Acusta Trail will ever happen, the property rights. I think the property rights issue is actually settled, but that's just one part of this bigger comprehensive plan. We have seen in numerous communities that the stimulus happens because of this sort of infrastructure we bring. So adopting this plan is absolutely, like, I think, a key thing to keep this community growing and moving forward. We want to bring younger people in. We want to bring jobs. We want to stimulate the economy. And just the fact that a one-day event brought in, what was the number? We don't know.
2013, that's
where they showed. 2013, 6 years ago, brought in $300,000. I mean, that's one day. So.
And that was looking at the whole spending in restaurants.
Right.
That was a survey, but I mean, it is documented that it brought in that there was $134,000 brought in from this year. That's just for the Rotary Club. That's not what was spent at restaurants, hotels. That's what the rec race entries and sponsorships brought in, $134,000.
Yeah, so I believe in just putting away the bike park, just the economic stimulus and job creation opportunities are really powerful for this. So.
I agree with you. We've got to do what we've got to do. I guess where I was coming from is you don't know where you're going until you know where you've been.
Yep.
We know where we've been, but we know where we have to go in order to get what we can.
I agree completely. I mean...
Mm-hmm. Call the question.
Do you want to take a vote? Can we take a vote? We don't have a motion on the floor. We don't. Someone like to make a motion to approve.
We recommend adoption of the Transylvania County Bicycle Plan to the County Commissioners.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
I would hope that you all would realize how we try to look at all sides of things here, because there's a lot of sides to this issue here.
Yeah.
But what's ultimately good for the county is why this board's here.
Yep.
We really appreciate the input from you guys.
Yes, thank you for coming here. Sure.
I will have to leave you safe for the rest of it.
Come on in and enjoy the rest of it.
I was going to let you know, straight from cycling, my bicycle shop, profits, proceeds, I'm teaming up with people to build affordable housing. So not only is affordable housing coming from just developers, but it's actually coming because cycling has created enough money here to help fund that. We're going for workforce housing, we're putting in apartments, there's a bunch of stuff that's going to be, you know, sitting in front of you guys down the road here. That's a direct result of cycling in our area.
And you believe that the change in age in this county, since this county is aging, that that will still continue that way?
People want to be here.
I'm talking about the old folks that live here.
What about them?
Well, I mean, they're going to utilize this as much as they can.
Absolutely. It's an amazing place to exercise and stay healthy and have a safe place to do that, to recreate. That's, straight and possibly straight from your own home or a nice public parking area.
Sam, don't you have little cabins that you've built back there?
That's pilot code behind us, but we're entering in a similar project as well.
Okay, so those aren't your cabins. Okay, but are they building more? How many are back there?
They have over 10 now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there's going to be, you'll probably see at least 21 more in the next year.
On your land?
And
there, sir. Okay. Thank you.
I did speak to Wayne about this, and he wanted to be here. He was a man last year, so he wanted to come and make it speak. He couldn't, but I mean, he says that it is overwhelmingly the number of people that stay in his cabin are cyclists. And he mentioned two different, Sam maybe knows more of the specifics, but there's two different groups that bring riders all over, and they have already gone into contract for like every. Every Tuesday and Thursday for like the next 9 or 12 months or something to rent every one of his cabins and bring people in to ride.
And it's not just riders, I know, because I know some people that have stayed back there and they don't
ride. Absolutely, yeah. I'm not saying only riders there, but
they're cute. It's
overwhelming that a larger majority are riders. Our future project is to bring the industry here for their corporate retreats and things like that, and it's just one more step to making you fall in love with the area.
Try hard.
Thank you.
I think Dale, with Oscar Blues, I know you mentioned that you don't like how this bike path, people are still going to find jobs outside the county. And in the immediate, the day that a bike path goes in, is it going to create 100 jobs? No. But Dale, when he came here and when he was coming here, he didn't need to come and work here. Dale was very successful and did not need another place. He didn't need another business. He didn't need another place to work. But he loved this area so much, and he created a very lucrative business in this area. He loved riding bikes here. He would fly in here, ride a bike for a weekend, and fly back to Colorado and run the brewery there. And he finally just said, I'm going to just have a brewery get this.
Alright, thank you guys.
I just want to share a personal story. Oh, can I? Well, my husband and I met on a bike trail. And it was an 84-mile bike trail from Maryland up into York, Pennsylvania. And the railroad had stopped running, right? So anyway, 2 years later, we decided we were going to ride our bicycles from Georgetown, Washington, D.C., to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It took us 6 days to ride 325 miles, but it was along the C&O Canal, where all the towns had, we went. It was great. You could ride in town, have dinner, ride back on your bicycle tent. And we tented every night, and we would ride 50, 60 miles, clean up, ride our bikes in the town to get a beer, bring beer back, cook. It was great. So it brings all kinds of children, older people who can't walk in the park because of the, it's flat. It's just a great, great thing to have.
Well, and to add to that story, I did that ride twice. So the piece from Cumberland, Maryland into downtown Pittsburgh is called the Great Allegheny Passage, and it's an old railroad bed that they converted into a bike path. Right after they opened it, I rode that trail, and the towns were they were railroad towns that had ceased to exist, a lot like you hear the stories of Travelers Rest 10 years ago. There was nothing there. There were no B&Bs, there were no hotel rooms, there were no places to eat, there was nowhere to get a cup of coffee, there were no bike shops, there was nothing. Those towns were dead. When we did it 5 or 6 years after that, it was like night and day. The towns had come alive. That's where everybody wanted to live because they had access to this trail. The transformation to me was amazing.
and that was just over a 5-year period. And are they going to bring heavy industry jobs, $30 an hour jobs? Probably not. But they're huge transformers for those towns. I mean, it was, the feel of the towns was completely different just in that 5-year period. And I think that's what some of these multi-use paths, you know, because we can argue whether that will ever happen again. But I mean, you don't have to look far to see, you know, with the Swamp Rabbit Trail to the travel trail.
We have to move on. We have to move on to the noise ordinance. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, thank you for coming, though.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you. Next on the order of old business, we have the noise ordinance. A lot of information.
A lot of information. Do you have it in, you guys? You have the stamina to look at the noise ordinance.
Yes, what's fresh in my mind.
We are here to do work for you. So if you guys are just warmed up, let's do it.
So, if I can get another one.
At the last meeting, we had the county attorney provide a presentation, and she suggested that three things be looked at. Decibel levels, clarity of the noise ordinance, so that some people just picking it up and reading it would understand what was allowed and not allowed. That it be content neutral, just like the sign control ordinance, for those of you that were involved with that. Making sure that some businesses aren't exempt while others have restrictions. And looking at a distance and a duration. So if the noise is intermittent over a certain period of time, how much of that time is it above the decibel level? If you put decibel levels in there, is it violating the decibel levels 50% of the time or 10% of the time? And is there a distance? People have to know where you're taking the decibel level measurement from. Mm-hmm. So, in an attempt to address those, numbers were thrown out. Mm-hmm. And you will see that in the decibel level section. But there's stuff to discuss on the way there as well. Well, some of it was what you guys told me to write.
Right.
So the original meeting we had, you looked at stuff. If you don't remember that, the definitions were in here, but they were not classified as definitions.
Right.
A couple definitions were added. Noise regulations. You'll see the scratch out. Those are the definitions that were moved up to the definition section.
Mm-hmm.
Sound measurements to determine if it's a violation. That's the decibel level that Planning Board wanted to consider. So is there a way that we can have objective validation of whether something is an objectionable noise, or a, what is it called? Offending noise.
Yeah.
Offending noise.
Yeah.
If it's an offending noise. So in your packets, that's on page 3. So everything above section 2.2 you have looked at in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Starting at section 2.2.
But before we get there.
Oh, yes.
Since Misty
Beth, Misty, yes.
said that unnecessary and too loud was language that was used in case law. Yeah. But we don't, we use unreasonably loud or disturbing we have in 2.1, which are great. Do we need to use unnecessary or too loud as well, or instead of? In addition to, if they don't see unnecessary and too loud is, mm-hmm. you know, kind of fuzzy, but so is disturbing or unreasonable, you know.
If you can support what you choose, then you are good. So if you choose levels that are unreasonably loud that are based on the federal EPA's guidelines, I gave you a summary of those in your agenda packet, yeah. that are based on the article you sent out, mm-hmm. are based on data, and it's not just pulled from air, then it will be more able to be supported in court.
Because if we go to decibels, some judges like that and some judges don't. So we need strong language. We need to be clear in the language, very clear.
Yes.
Specific.
And that's where 2.2, 3, and 4, and 5 come in. 2.2, 2.2, 3, 4, 5.
Trying. Yes. I think all of these need to be looked at very closely. I ask for guidance from the Sheriff's Department on 2.2.2, 2.2.3, and 2.2.4, and did not receive a response in the last couple of weeks. So, normally when you see a sound measurement being taken in an ordinance, so it's from the adjoining property lines or the property lines of the property that complained. How do we do it if they're right next to each other, if they're 20 feet away?
Right.
How do we do it if it's 2 miles away? How do we have something in Transylvania County that is uniform, that is supportive? And so 500 linear feet is what was used as a sign control ordinance. When you were looking at an off-premise sign located on someone's residence, it had to be 500 feet from their residence.
But this is sound.
But this is sound, exactly. And so do we remove the linear feet and just do the adjoining property lines?
Or at their property line.
At the offending noise sources property lines.
In other words, what we're saying there is noise has to be contained within their property, which is not possible. So.
True.
There's a situation in my neighborhood where there's a new neighbor that's moved in who's renting and a neighbor that's been there for a year. And they have, one has threatened the other. So the one that made the threat, because they don't like her children playing on her yard and they don't like the cat coming over to the yard, which is ridiculous. She plays her radio on her back porch and closes her doors and windows and blasts it to the point that I'm not even the neighbor. I'm down the street. And I can't hear who I'm talking to on the phone. So that's way more, like, I can think in terms of yards, 150 yards. But from that neighbor to the offending property owner, maybe 100 yards. House to house.
Should we,
and that's during the daytime.
Should we take the measurement that the complainants are?
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's the source of the complaint, hearing the noise, is where we need to.
Yeah, that was something.
To
yeah, yeah. Should we look at that? Or?
people don't care. But to you, it's...
And the police have been called multiple times. Yeah. Actually, we're in the county. Well, no, we're in ETJ, so the police come.
So I think they're complaining.
She's
maybe the noise let alone the detective that the complaint is from.
And that would be that your question about how topography plays into how noise carries.
Topography, wind, humidity,
right.
All those things.
So at the complainant's property line. Okay.
That may be the same as the offender's property line.
It is in this case, yeah.
But that could be, that's a uniform place to take it.
Yeah.
And the police want more than one. No, that's another thing. A witness. Somebody other than the person that's complaining. Someone else that's offended by the noise helps.
So basically, 2.2.2 would be changed to taking the measurement at the complainant's property line.
Yeah. Sound measurements shall be taken at the complainant's property lines.
And this ordinance is complaint driven.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's not. Mm-hmm. The sheriff rides down the road with his meter looking
for trouble.
Driven. Some places they do things like that. So that, to me, that makes sense.
Okay.
Complaints are
in the direction of the noise, I take it. Because the complainant's property line is four directions.
Meter
so
directional,
ah,
or not? Like, is a decibel meter directional, or is it?
I don't know.
Pulling from all directions.
Would you all like me to see if I can get the sheriff's or the city of Brevard's decibel reader in?
I'm just curious. Do you need to point it somewhere, or can you just hold the thing up? Is it like a light meter where you have to like?
I think you can program them to cut out.
Background.
That's important too.
That would be good because you don't want background ambient noise to supplement the sound of a complaint.
Yeah. Well, basically, this noise would have to be above the background noise.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're living with background noise all the time, I don't see how you can complain today because the background noise is going on, whatever that might be.
I bet you in the county there's less background noise than in the city. You know?
Yes.
Quiet neighborhoods, even farms, it's not going to be.
You think the measurement for 5 minutes, that's still reasonable at the complainant's property line?
Unless the complainant sees the police car coming.
That's
happened too.
They shut
right.
it down, and when they leave the party,
they close right back up.
And I was hoping to see.
There's just so much information out there, so much literature, and so many different opinions.
Yes.
And I think I think this has been a problem for a long time, and we just haven't addressed it.
Yep.
Unless, like,
it says a minimum of 5 minutes.
Right.
So they can go longer.
They could go longer.
You see, that way they record it longer, too, and somebody says, well, no, it wasn't that loud. Well, yeah, here it is. Here's the printout from the meter. Now, 2.2.5.
Before you get there, I have one. Because 2.2.3 is a minimum of 5 minutes, I would suggest that 2.2.4 says during the sound of measurement instead of during the 5 minute measurement because they might be there for 20 minutes.
During the duration of the reading or something?
Yeah, during the...
During the time of measurement, something like that.
Time of sound measurement. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Is that 2.2.4?
That is 2.2.4. Do you have more?
Can you go ahead?
Okay.
Brett's going to read.
The offending noise level will be considered a violation if it exceeds the decibel limit for a duration of more than 50% during the time of sound measurement.
Okay.
Or during the time the sound was measured. I mean, that sounds better, but it means the same thing.
Join. 2.2.5? is ambient congruent with background?
Yes.
All right, so 10 decibels above background noise. I can see between those hours, but gosh, background noise is going to be relative to where you are in the county.
Yes.
The closer you are to the ETJ in the city, the louder.
Mm-hmm.
The further out in the middle of nowhere, that's going to be, that'll be on a sliding scale.
Yes.
How did we arrive at 10?
I believe we took it from the city of Brevard's ordinance.
Yeah. The reason why I asked the question is that would be a, I'm sure a lawyer would ask some question. Where did the 10 come from? Where did the 20 come from?
Right.
Why not 5?
Well, so the if
why
you
not 20 and 30? I mean, you know.
You all were handed out a lot of information this month, a lot. And I gave you a summary of this document. I didn't send you all of it. But it talks about different outdoor sound being different in different neighborhoods. And they concluded in having an average. You notice in the summary that the table had outdoor activity interference and annoyance if it's greater than 55 decibel levels. So looking at all of the survey data for all of the outside sounds, whether it's urban or rural, they came up with 55 is the normal, and anything over 55 causes annoyance or disturbance.
It is annoyance.
It is annoyance, yes.
And see, according to this scale here, urban residence background noise is 50 decibels, conversation 3 feet away is 60, classroom chatter would be 70 decibels.
Right.
And a freight train would be 100 feet away from the freight train would be 80 decibels. And I think it's above 85 that can begin to do damage to the ear.
So the way that the EPA came up with these is they looked at what the noise level had to be to interfere with human activities. And they found that people got annoyed if they could not have a normal conversation. So if the extra noise caused them to be unable to concentrate or have a normal conversation, it was an annoyance. And so that's where they came up with the 55 decibel levels. I am going to go close that door so the bug doesn't come in.
Thank you. Will you move the to the bugs?
I heard the bugs.
Oh, the bugs.
I hear them.
Yeah, that's this table.
Oh, really?
Right?
Yeah. So, being...
So there is
so
some data...
Being 10 decibel levels above the 55 would be 65. Do we just want to do that? Or do we want to have a measurement that we have to find the ambient noise level? You see what I'm asking?
Yeah.
We could say a violation is 65 decibel levels between the hours of 9 p.m. and 6 a.m. Then we don't have to get an ambient noise reading with just 65 decibel levels. And that is based on 10 above the 55 level limit that the EPA established.
Why did you choose 10?
Because that was what was originally put in the draft in December based on the city of Brevard's ordinance.
Okay. I'm
like you. I'm learning a lot about noise. So I have a lot more resources than I did in December. But I didn't want to completely change everything that you had already seen. I thought that it would establish a discussion point.
I do think we need to I'm hesitant to give it a specific decibel rating because, like everyone said, if you live next to the highway, your ambient noise is going to be much different than if you live on a farm. So it is, I think you are on the right path about establishing a threshold above. I'm not sure how they would establish the ambient noise. I guess they have to take a reading when the fence isn't happening or whatever. I'm just not sure if 10 is enough of a threshold, because where is that? There's this thermometer chart thing that you were looking at.
The OSHA.
Yeah. And the thing that's tricky about decibel readings is it's exponential, it's logarithmic. So 10 to 20 is not this gradient, it's a logarithmic change. So, you know, what is unreasonably loud? 60? You know, classroom chatter? I would say, like, if I'm at home in my house, and I can, if the noise is a level of classroom chatter from some other, that's annoying to me. Like, that's a lot of noise.
Especially if you're inside.
That's what I mean, like, if you're inside. So, do we set it at 60, or, I don't know what urban residents.
See, I don't even know what this sound is at 60. I have no idea. Like, a decibel, how loud is the sound at 60?
Well, normal conversation is 50 to 60.
It is?
Yeah, like this,
like
I
this?
Think is, well, 3 feet away, you and me talking.
Is 60.
It's surprisingly loud.
It's not much.
But step from 60 to 7 is not
it's like,
this 10. It's
like time 10.
Right. So that's where it gets tricky, because obviously this conversation in a classroom full of kids is a different, much different thing. So it does feel like if I'm in my house, and I can hear this, if I can hear a noise as loud as this conversation coming from someone else's property, that's annoying.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty loud, really, right?
It would have to be able to hear it inside your house.
Yeah. So that could be like a barking dog. Like, if a barking dog is as loud as I'm talking and I'm in my house, I would be going nuts. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's like 50, you know, what's 50? See, I don't know what urban residents describe.
Well, that's very subjective.
Yeah.
What kind of
urban? What is that, right?
Asheville or Brevard?
Yeah. Or Chicago. You know.
And, you know, Michigan, it sound like if we have a number, decibel level, how long a period of time were the decibels above that,
right,
too? So I feel like even greater.
Has the city's ordinance been tested in any way? Do you know?
Not that I'm aware of. Not recently. Having the decibel level has allowed them to avoid the court cases, or based on my conversations. But the sheriff did say establishing that ambient noise is subjective.
Mm-hmm.
What if we assigned an ambient noise based on EPA's recommendation? Say it was say if we called ambient noise 60 or 70 according to the thermometer.
Well, that's OSHA. The thermometer is OSHA. What is allowed in businesses? The EPA is that summary.
Yeah, and they do say indoor activity, interference, and annoyance. So they're saying an annoying sound is 45 decibels, right? So it would make sense that that would hold true to 45 above your ambient noise, I think, if I'm reading it correctly. So they're kind of saying, it sounds like in this table one on page 3 of the summary, they're kind of setting these thresholds. So 45, and it's, if you're outside, it's 55.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hearing loss here happens at 70, which seems low. But
if it's sustained at 70 for 24 hours.
Oh, okay. That would be terrible.
If it's 70 decibels for 24 hours, you can have hearing loss. 75 is considered appropriate for an 8-hour typical daily work period.
So, Joy, do we need to change anything in 2.5, or just go with the ambient noise? ordinance as written.
If you want to designate a decibel level for the ambient noise, you could.
But since that ambient noise could be relative to any part of the county, if we just leave it ambient noise, that might be to our benefit.
Because that would address the quarries, that would address the farms, that would address... We don't have zoning. So we can't have different ambient levels based on land use type because there is no zoning. And so we don't have an industrial area that can have higher levels of sound. We don't have residential areas that are restricted with certain levels of sound. So whatever sound that you all determine has to be applicable no matter where you are. And so by having the ambient just be ambient, it the definitions say how you measure ambient, but it allows it to be Cedar Mountain or next to the quarry in Penrose, or, you know, it allows it to be no matter where you are.
Okay, that makes sense. And then see, by having the decibel levels between those hours, I mean, everybody realizes there's going to be more sound during the day than there is at night.
Right.
And so that, and if we're pro-industry here, I mean, that's, you know, we don't want to shut industry down because of the noise ordinance.
Absolutely. I think my only, what I wonder is 10 decibels above whatever the ambient noise, I think that's too low. I think that's too quiet. I think it needs to be higher.
I would agree.
If you look at, 10 doesn't even show up on our chart as an actual noise. It's like
No. That's a 10 above.
Above the ambient.
Above the ambient.
But
so the ambient, if the ambient is 55, that would be 65 decibels.
I guess my question, is that the total reading on the meter, or is that, let's say the ambient is 55, is it 65 in addition to the 50? So it's really a total of the ambient and the noise complaint. And I just think 10 decibels may not be enough of a differential. Or am I reading that incorrectly?
I was reading it to be, if the ambient noise is 55, and if you add 10 to it, then it would be 65, which is actually more than 2.2.6.
But what if the ambient noise is 20? And we're saying, okay, now it's 30. Is 30 decibels really a it's not enough for a complaint, but we're saying it is here.
Well, it could be enough for a complaint, depending on where you are in the county.
But even, like, you're right. I mean, it depends if a 30 is the north rim of the Grand Canyon.
But if we don't zone, we can't differentiate, right?
I mean, 30 is listed as the north rim of the Grand Canyon, which is not really a loud environment. So
you'd have to go to the Roscoe Museum.
I know. That's what I'm saying. It's like
Blue Ridge Parkway.
Right. It's like, damn, Blue Ridge Parkway is so loud. So that's what I'm kind of getting to, is, like, the ambient noise is critical. Obviously, if your ambient noise is 80, you probably can't even live in that environment for a long term. Right. And so if we add 10 onto that, great. It doesn't matter. No one's living there. So
living where it's 80 already.
Yeah.
They may not even notice 10.
You're deaf. Yeah.
But that is a logarithmic scale, isn't it?
It is. Yes. Yeah.
So what if there's no ambient noise? And this, I mean, this is...
You hear the rotor back there.
I mean, I'm sorry. Yeah.
You'll hear air conditioning units. You'll hear radon pumps. You'll hear US-64 airplanes. I'm just thinking about my yard.
I guess it's like, do we say there's an ambient noise reading, whatever it is? We have to say that we're zeroing that out so that it's background, so it's zeroed out. How noisy is it to be bothersome? It's not 10 decibels, that's way too quiet. Is it 50? I don't know, but it's like, that's what I'm getting to, because we're saying it doesn't matter what the ambient noise is. We are getting, we're zeroing it out.
So we don't need 2.2.5 then. We just need 2.2.7.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what we're getting to. I mean, they need to take the ambient noise level as a 0 point.
Do they?
I think so, because it can vary so much depending on where you live.
You see, the way I read that, just reading through it, I assumed that to be ambient noise plus 10 decibels.
That's how I
know. Ambient noise plus 20. I mean, I didn't even think about zeroing anything out. I just assumed that it was ambient plus.
That's what I read too, and I'm just thinking if the ambient is 20, and you say, okay, we took a reading, you have a noise complaint, we came out there, the ambient noise is 20, we read 10 decibels above that, so it's a total of 30. That is not a noise complaint.
So what about this? A violation shall have occurred if the offending noise level exceeds the ambient noise level by more than 10 decibels, so that the total noise level is greater than blank. Between the hours of...
Yeah, I like where that's going.
So that the total noise level...
And then we just have to determine what's too loud.
Yeah, what's that figure you're going to...
Well, would you go with the 60 that's down below? Or would you go with 10 plus 55, which would be 65? I'm referring back to the EPA guidelines for outdoor.
The EPA gives us something to hang our hat on.
Well,
so is that the
noise is real low. The
right
noise that we're concerned about would be higher.
Yeah.
And still not exceed the figure you're talking about.
That's true.
And that could very well
be annoying.
A valid complaint.
Yeah. So by combining, or so by putting a minimum decibel level, we are not allowing that to be a valid complaint.
Right.
But now, are there not places in the county where it is quiet and peaceful and docile enough in the county that anything 10 to 15 decibels above that could not be considered a complaint?
So do we have places that it's 30 decibels? The ambient noise is 30 decibels? Probably.
Yeah.
This is where it's so subjective. I mean, how do you put a number on this? Because to you, you may hear, a cow mooing in your neighbor's yard, and that may be like, nah. For me, I may not even hear it.
Well, it's like that when I told my story about the dog.
Right.
The last time that I know that dog had to be a half a mile away from my house, but I heard it clearly in the middle of the night.
But there's a note here in the full document that I highlighted because I thought it might come into play, and that a measurement approximately 25 feet from a mountain waterfall on a small canyon stream in Wyoming gave a LDN of approximately 85 decibel levels. Mm-hmm. So if you're standing next to a small canyon stream with a waterfall, that is 85 decibels. But you know, when you're standing at the near the foot of Looking Glass, you have to talk really loud to hear next to someone.
Yeah.
And so you're 25 feet from that waterfall. But if you get 500 feet from that, the noise level is very low. Yeah.
And that'll also vary by season.
Yes.
Leaf cover.
Totally.
Vegetative density and so forth.
I don't know how we're going to do this. I haven't figured it.
Say what you were saying again, Joy, about how you wanted to change 2.2.5.
Okay. A violation shall have occurred if the offending noise level exceeds the ambient noise level by more than 10 decibels, so that the total noise level is over 65 decibels between the hours of 9 and 6 a.m. I said 65 because of using the 55 right. of outdoor, which means that 2.2.6 would need to be increased to 65.
Yeah.
If you guys like that figure.
To me, that sounds like a good compromise. But, you know, the other guys here need to weigh in on that.
I like that, too. I would just say, is there a way we can hear it as is? I'm kind of curious about seeing a meter and taking some real measurements. Like, I would love to have a meter here, but then when Shane and I are just talking, getting a decibel reading on that. Or even, like, we have public comment going, what's the decibel, you know?
Yeah. Well, according to the OSHA conversation, I would assume like we're having, is 60 decibels.
Yes.
Right now. It's not, hopefully it's not considered noise.
But I would say if that noise, if it's this loud in your house from your neighbor's yard, then that's pretty noisy. So it's so relevant. Yeah.
I couldn't stand right here and have a phone conversation while you're having a conversation and hear what's going on the phone.
Right.
Yeah, you could. Yeah.
I couldn't. I would have to step over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
even the TV on a regular volume, you have to go another one.
Yeah.
But the problem I have is during the day, because most of this stuff occurs during the day, and according to the sheriff's department, can't do a thing about it. They really can't.
Hmm. I would think that most of the complaints, though, would be in the evenings, at night, when people are trying to peace and quiet.
Friday and Saturday.
Yes. Do you distinguish weekends? I don't think we can do that.
I like what you were saying on your change to 2.2.5, which is also relative to 2.2.6.
Yeah. And have that same verbiage applied to both daytime and nighttime.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have the same decibel levels.
Right.
They don't change.
Right.
They don't get greater at night.
Oh, no. They do get greater at night.
Like 10 more?
Yeah.
So is between 9 p.m. and 6 a.m.
9 p.m. and 6 a.m., that's night. So right. It can't be higher than 65 decibels at night.
65, okay.
During the day? 6 a.m. and 9 p.m., it would be
55?
75.
Okay.
Which is where you start getting hearing loss after 8 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
70, I mean 80 is freight train from 100 feet.
Yeah.
Right.
And so pretty loud. So one of the questions I get is how long does it go on? If you've got construction going on next door, it's not going to go on 6 to 9 more than likely. It'll be
right.
10 hours probably maximum.
Right.
And in the summer, contractors will tend to work later into the evening, but by 9 o'clock, those contractors I know have been
scared. Yeah, they're working past 9 is a problem.
Yeah.
Something that was in that 8-year-old document that I picked up, if you're going to set limits day and night, the same limit in residential is going to be either too restrictive. It might be too restrictive in area, just not restrictive enough. Mm-hmm. But it can't be too restrictive. I mean, the people have to be allowed to.
Oh, I don't know. And we can't distinguish between residential or anywhere else because we don't have zoning.
Correct. It doesn't exist.
So
what about industry? We were concerned about that industry too. Does that need to be in this section too?
I don't think we can.
Because no zoning.
Well, we don't have zoning, and we can't discriminate by business type. It has to be content neutral. So whatever industry is making the noise, whether it's a nightclub or an airport or a quarry or construction, has to be treated the same. And that's a different section.
and the hours we're establishing really affect that, because nightclubs go on a long time past 9 o'clock in most cases. But this is my experience.
And you know, the officer that came in said, what was it, barking dogs and something else that were the most, what was the other one? I can't remember. At night.
I don't
know. I think you mentioned nightclubs.
One, we're beating this to death. I know. One last question. Since in 2.2.6, we're saying that if you can't establish ambient, we're saying 60 and 70. I'm assuming those came from the Brevard ordinance as well.
And it has to change to 65 and 75.
Well, I was going
to
say maybe we change 2.2.5 to be 60 and 70, just because at least we know that 60 and 70 are part of an established ordinance in Brevard.
But then we can't refer back to the EPA document. That.
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
So 2.2.6, it will also be 65 and 75.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what Brevard used to establish
those
limits.
Well,
we
got
to have some basis. We got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be the same regard.
Yeah.
I hope we're not on this whole year.
We will be.
I agree with Bob. We've got to start somewhere. We've got to start this place.
We did. We talked about it.
Okay. Yeah, let's do this too. One of the things.
We can change it this time.
Again, it's just, you
know. Yeah, it's 2.6 on the next page talks about, I'll say, residential type noise makers. Okay? And I think if we allow that on the weekends, starting at 6 a.m., we will be some morning fights and cut-ins and that sort of thing. Because, some of the back page there.
I agree. I think 6 is too early to be cutting
the
grass.
Somebody cutting at 6 a.m. in the morning is not going to go over
well. Yeah, that's not going to
happen. And I believe in some way we need to define on the weekends that you can't start. Well, I was familiar with you couldn't start before 8 o'clock.
No, we're not distinguishing days of the week, though, are we?
I don't remember if it was a...
That's true.
I don't know if we can. I don't know.
But, you know, people sleep late on the weekends. Kids, they won't
not
be
your,
kids to
not
stay
your families.
Yeah. I mean, this is another tricky one, because what if you're got the farmer and you're cutting hay at 5 a.m. and your neighbor thinking...
Farming's going to be exempt.
Oh, that's right. Farming exempt. Right.
Farming's exempt. So okay, this, well, this is like in a subdivision. Or And we do have some of those in the county where the houses are reasonably close, and that would be a problem.
And see, a lot of the lawn care businesses in this county, they'll work 12, 13, 14 hours a day.
Yeah.
And they start early.
Yeah.
But on the weekends. You've got to consider that people expect less to quiet for a longer period of time.
So you would like to suggest a 2.6.1 where on weekends the shall not exceed
I would say 8 o'clock, but that's based on my experience in an urban city.
That's and on weekends.
On weekends, right.
Okay.
Otherwise,
weekends being Saturday and Sunday. It should be 8 to maybe 7 or 8 to 8 or 8 to 7. I don't remember if it was a top minimum. Because most people were like me, actually had breakfast to get out and get the lawn work done. Then you could do other things.
So 2.6 is okay for the during the week. 2.6.1 would be clarified.
I'm not even sure during the week, but I can live with that. I mean, so many people get up community, and they're up getting ready to go to work.
For contractors, you got to allow them to have time to get before the 1 o'clock showers. Or the 3 o'clock showers.
They may be on the site, but they're getting their tube and getting ready. So
what'd you come up with? 2.6.1.
I don't know. Hopefully just got it. So what I came up was this time period shall be 8 to 9 on the weekend. But that's going to require finagling on wording.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be underneath the noise. And so it might just be another sentence. And not a 2.6.1.
Like I said, not all residential noise makers.
So what I'm saying is I don't have the mental capacity to come up with a nice sounding word right now.
Okay.
You'll see something about 8 to 9 in your next version to consider.
It's 9 o'clock. How does everybody feel about continuing our calling in tonight, since I feel like mine is going to explode?
We need to come back to 2.2 and 2.8 that were scratched out from the attorney's visit and needed more discussion. And after that, we'll be done with section 2 and we can put it and come back and start up from here. Does that sound okay?
Okay,
Sandy?
If you want to keep going.
Just these 2 points.
Okay.
2.2 and 2.8 were scratched out because of what the attorney said about her concerns of calling out specifically the military ceremonies and one type of business. However, this is for discussion. And if you have the mental capacity to have that discussion now, so be it.
We got to cover this because there's going to be more stuff to do at our next meeting.
Okay.
I'm game.
All right.
I'm keeping on.
Okay.
So, construction operations. If you look at the OSHA thermometer, they reach 100 decibel levels at a construction site, on the site. Now, that construction site is not going to have that level of noise for 8 hours.
No, it would be
unusual. It would be intermittent. It would be depending on if they're using the nail gun for 10 minutes and then moving on to a saw. The sound level is going to change. It's not going to be steady all day because they do different things throughout the day.
They have
a generator.
Which they always do now. I mean, I've been on so many construction sites that
you
cannot talk. So.
Well, drilling rig will run for 8 hours straight and it's over 100 decibels.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh.
So.
And it's some pounding, and if there's piles being, of course, I'm in a different place, but if there's pile driving being done, it's going on in the wall.
Bam.
Bam. Yeah, that is. Yeah.
Well,
so.
They did that when they were building what we call across from Henry's. What do you call that? That building down there.
Oh, the French
Fries. They pounded piles in there.
Yeah.
But it was done, you know.
So did the lawyer wish she?
She was more concerned
about
the military music being
content, right? It's
content
specific, yeah.
Than construction. But I personally don't see the difference. I mean, why is construction different than entertainment site or an entertainment center? I guess we're saying between 6 and 9, and that's what makes it different. because there's a time limit for the evening.
Well, I've seen construction, like I'm talking about, go on and on.
Right.
Way into the night, or maybe all night long. I know one instance where they poured concrete all night long with the trucks sitting there and running and revved up the pump and that sort of thing.
And so starting at 9, they would start to have to follow this ordinance. But between 6 and 9, they would be exempt based on the current ordinance that we have today.
She had a reason for
recommending. See, when, I mean, how did we get into this mess?
Well, Misty had a reason for marking that out.
Oh, no, she didn't mark it out. I did. And so, thinking back to her conversation, does it need to be marked out?
Can we,
or do
instead
we,
of calling out construction, can we say, like, commercial operations, or not tie it to a specific...
Yeah.
Industry?
Yeah.
If, I mean, that's the problem, right? We need to encompass either all or nothing.
Right. So instead of being construction, it's industry?
Industrial operations or...
But construction's not industrial.
Yeah, now, or commercial. That's not a great word either. Because what I worry about...
Development?
Development, maybe. I don't know what the word is, but I wonder if we can... Because what I do worry about is, like, one time concrete trucks may have to do that, but then maybe that becomes the practice, and then suddenly all, it's like, this one, I mean, I know a construction company that will honestly work all night if they can until they just are told to stop.
Right.
And that's what, we don't want that. We don't want that to happen. So it would be nice to have some provision that we can say, this is why you can't do that, instead of, like, asking. But it can't, we can't say construction. We have to find a broader term.
But wouldn't the previous section that we just talked about, that 2.6, 4, 5, and 6, would take care of that?
No.
If it became a complaint.
If construction is 100 decibels and the property owner is 25 feet away, they're going to be in violation of the ordinance the whole time.
The whole time.
Because they're, I'm just throwing out a number based on this, but it would be probably 80 decibels with a freight train and the construction site be about the same noise level.
Could be. Yeah.
So if you're 100 feet away from the construction site, it would be about 80 decibels based on the OSHA thermometer. And 80 is above this 75. So if we don't exempt construction, then construction activities could be in violation. It would be, but it's complaint driven.
It
so
is. I mean, that's
who's
important.
Going to be
right.
calling on their neighbor who's building a house? Well, if they don't want a house there, they might.
Yeah, but if I have, you know, if I live next door to a house under construction and it was 10 o'clock at night, I would probably walk over there and be like, "Stop!" But someone's going to call the police. Someone might.
And that is not within their exempt period.
Right.
So
I mean, the construction company has no reason to stop me. They're not there.
My experience would be that building the house, they're not going to work after dark too much,
especially for OSHA safety rules.
Right.
Well, they've got too many safety rules. I mean, they're not going to be on the roof trying to drive nails at 10 o'clock.
So I think it needs to stay in there, even though I put the line through it. But I think revisiting whether it's development or
but I'm not sure. To me, construction includes development, right?
Yeah.
Development would be better than construction. I can't think of the word.
Yeah, it has to be. I mean, I like development just because it's sort of just a broader term. but it, that still doesn't necessarily encompass. I mean, industrial, I think, is too narrow because that's just a subset of construction, or a subset of, or construction is really a subset of industrial. I don't know if development, right? I think that's closer. I just don't think we can call out construction companies in particular.
I just looked it up.
Did you?
You looked up synonyms? No, well, I looked up industrial.
Synonyms for construction are fabrication, contriving, creation. Development may even include the industrial practices. You could argue that the quarry or that the Sylvan Sport is development.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not housing development, but it's economic development. And so that could be a way to... But then anyone could argue anything is development.
Right.
So...
I like that
you said fabrication. Fabrication operations.
Developing activities in fabrication. That covers them all.
If you look at the definition of industry that was sent out a few months ago, it includes the word fabrication.
I like that one. Yeah.
So if we do fabrication operations, no one would have any idea what we're talking about.
Correct.
It wouldn't be readable to the general layperson.
Really loud. I mean, can we not say industrial operations?
But is that in, is that part of construction?
It is.
It, I mean, they could argue that it is.
No, you're right. I think it is.
What's wrong with construction?
We can't call out a specific
one type of industry.
We have to like be general, so we can't call out construction, the construction industry specifically. We have to keep it broader because of the zoning, because we have no zoning restrictions. So we cannot. It's the same thing with the sign ordinance, where we couldn't say this company can do this, but this company can't. We can't discriminate them.
But construction is a different element than industry.
Yeah, that's the word. Yeah.
Yeah.
To be two or same.
There's a green industry and lighting is
going. When people are coming up with ordinances, we try to make them to where everybody can understand. But is there not a point where sometimes it just has to be technical?
Yeah.
Yes.
I would like it technical in this case. Sometimes it has to be. I mean, how are you supposed to...
How are you going to define it without technology? That's what I'm thinking about.
Okay.
Right, so your recommendation is to leave that paragraph 2.2 in
there and look at the word construction.
I think we'll leave 2.2 in.
Yeah, I think we all want to keep it in. It's just...
Yeah.
2.8, I didn't understand why she was... To me, military ceremonies, where are those going to take place? The yard arm is going to be a cemetery.
Yeah, I would think if anybody has problems with a military ceremony in a cemetery, they got to do that. Too bad.
I think that's why we cross it out, so it's not.
Just
cross it out.
That's a... Military people have deserved the right to have music at their ceremonies.
I think that will all be left in too. I mean, we, you know, this thing may be in effect 20 years and you never get a challenge. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, of course, we could get one. Mm-hmm. You never know.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're going to leave it in.
And
I'm not going to talk about that.
as long as nobody complains.
Y'all kind of see who cares. I don't know who cares. Now, the rest of this, was procedure.
I think I heard Sandy say that we needed to call it a night pretty soon. So before we get into the rest of it, I think dogs is going to take a bit, specifically.
I do too.
And so let's leave it at where we are.
There's no rush to get this recommended to the commissioners, is there?
No.
Okay, yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, and we're missing two people that I enjoyed your input too on that.
Yes.
Okay. Right. So moving on, we have small area plan update.
So the small area plan update, you were aware that the county commissioners were requesting people to apply to be on the Cedar Mountain Small Area Plan Committee.
Mm-hmm.
They would like a broader representation and more applicants. So they have reissued the call for applications. And so you may have seen in the paper a call for applications to be on the Cedar Mountain Small Area Plan Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the update. Oh, for Cedar Mountain. Dunn's Rock, we rescheduled our meeting to be tonight so that I could attend the Dunn's Rock. It turns out that they would prefer that I come in July.
Oh.
So I apologize for...
It's okay.
Oh, well. We have this fancy room.
So it's just life.
Can I ask one question about... I'm sorry, the applications. Were they looking for more people outside of Cedar?
No.
They just didn't get enough from that community.
See, I'm shocked by that because we have so many people
coming in
from there. Interested.
Yep.
How many did they get, Stephen? 7, did you say?
7. Not all of them were from within the boundary of Cedar Mountain. So they were hoping for some more.
Did they need to be full-time residents too? Okay.
It would not help. Well, I mean, you said I didn't need to sign up, but it would help if I did, the numbers.
I don't think so, because it would complicate things.
Kind of a conflict of interest.
You would be on the small area plan committee that would be making a recommendation to the planning board. Would you be able to vote as a planning board member?
Theoretically
not.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
That's like that'd be a call.
So I think it...
Okay.
You can be involved with the public meetings, and I hope that you will be, as a planning board member, as any of you are able to hear from the public. That was very... beneficial during the development of the comprehensive plan for planning board members to hear what people were saying at the public input meetings.
Okay. If we're made aware of them and I don't have other things, I would be glad to come.
Yeah. So Dunn's Rock has requested that I or staff attend their meeting in July. To provide a presentation on the small area plan process.
Okay.
So,
I guess they weren't quite ready.
No.
Okay. All right. New business, planning and community development update. What you got?
Well, we earlier tonight we met with the consultant that has been hired to do the oral history and architectural survey of the African American related heritage resources in Transylvania County. You know, the Joint Historic Preservation Commission received a grant to survey the African American heritage related resources in Transylvania County. That grant paid for the hiring of a consultant who has the expertise to do that. And so we met the consultant tonight and are beginning to finalize a kickoff event. And I will let you guys know when it is. And it will be to let the African-American communities know that this project is happening and to introduce the consultant to them, to begin the oral history recordings that will inform the buildings that have an architectural survey done.
You know, the Heritage Museum might have some already.
The Heritage Museum is working on it, and okay. The consultant knows all the resources that the museum and the library has.
Okay.
And so the oral history interviews of the living elders in that community will add to the knowledge that's already there and will ensure that it's available for the community to use elsewhere. So the Transportation Advisory Committee has begun developing the comprehensive transportation plan. The first meeting for that took place this week, and 25 people showed up to begin looking at a countywide comprehensive transportation plan that will look at all types of transportation, including railroad, roads, bicycle, pedestrians. It's supposed to look at ferries, and I know the French Broad at one time was supposed to be a shipping area. It may or may not look at the French Broad River because it's no longer a transportation route.
Yeah, it was for the steamboat.
The steamboat, yeah.
The Mountain Lily.
That got, yes. So I doubt they'll look at the French Broad River, but they may, because it could be used for transportation. The Transportation Advisory Committee also looked at the draft bicycle plan Tuesday night. Different group. The Advisory Committee is the advisory board to the Board of Commissioners. The Comprehensive Transportation Plan Working Group is some members of that advisory committee plus others. Mac McNeely is on the working group, mm-hmm. but is not on the Transportation Advisory Committee. Anyway, the Transportation Advisory Committee recommended that the county commissioners approve the bike plan with two changes, and those changes were that their committee be the Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Committee, because they work with NCDOT on prioritizing projects.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want a standalone advisory committee recommending different projects. And so they recommended that they be the advisory committee that looks at bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure, but that they have a dedicated member on the committee to represent the bicycle and pedestrian concerns and infrastructure needs. And so they have one vacancy that will begin June 1st. And if the county commissioners like that recommendation, the Transportation Advisory Committee may have one member dedicated to a bicycle or pedestrian advocate. So the bike plan that you saw, there's a paragraph on page 49 and a paragraph on page 51 mm-hmm. that may change.
Okay.
So two paragraphs may be modified.
So it's not going to the commissioners quite yet?
Oh, no. The commissioners will get the version you have.
Oh, okay.
And will have
with
that
those recommendations.
With those recommendations. Okay. And they will be choosing whether they are going to incorporate those recommendations.
Okay.
The county commissioners approved issuing a request for proposals for workforce housing on county-owned land. So that is in the paper or was in the paper last week. You may have seen the Calvert Workforce Housing Development Project.
The old landfill up there. Yeah.
Adjacent to the old landfill, yeah.
Are we talking the article, it's in back of the pet shelter?
Yes. Okay. So the county commissioners are accepting proposals from developers who will be developing workforce housing on that property. Well, they will be once come April 18th.
Is there a problem that it's next to a landfill?
There might be a perception problem, but because they are going to be able to access water and sewer from Rosman, there's not a concern about contamination. So the problem would be perception more than actual environmental concerns.
Okay.
Okay. You see that infrastructure up there help make that happen. Rosman's water and sewer.
Yep, it's there.
There was an article in the paper about teachers not being able to find affordable housing in this county. That's sad.
I wondered how that got down to decided to find a little taller where the teachers college.
Well, if his son is now 14 and he came here when his son was 3, he's been here for 10 years. The cost of housing has increased significantly over that time.
I couldn't afford to buy a house here right now if I had to. Honestly, it wasn't a job. I couldn't afford it. All right, any board members have anything they want to add? You have anything you want to add to as we close the meeting?
I think
we had a nice turn.
That discussion that we had on that bike proposal before it was voted on is top of the line. I'm just so impressed with that. John, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I appreciate you guys hearing everybody. I know you took a lot more time than what you had to do, which means a lot later than what you planned to do, but I think...
that always happens.
I wish everybody would say, I apologize. I mean, I'm not saying that you guys take the time to hear me, and so if at all possible, I think I owe you that respect to stay here and hear you as well.
Well, the noise ordinance is
thank
riveting.
You.
I mean, who wouldn't want to be here for that?
Actually, I was not part of the meeting. You probably don't want to have public comments at the end, as much as you've already heard. And I say just out of respect for you guys, because I appreciate your time you put in. But I was asking to think maybe about that weekend thing, just because I think it discriminates against people that work whose weekends are not on Saturdays and Sundays. There's a lot of nurses, firefighters, policemen. Imagine when Atucha and DuPont were here, they were working. There were people that worked Saturdays and Sundays. They didn't shut down on Saturdays and Sundays. So it's kind of like we're giving an award of sleeping in on Saturday and Sunday to people that have a Monday and Friday job. But for the policemen that work Saturday and Sunday, we don't really care about you getting the day off. I think it's a little discriminatory to that.
That's an interesting point.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah,
we have so many retirees here, too, that get to sleep late 7 days a week. So
what? It is complaint driven.
Yeah, I know. And I guess it's just lucky that I'm here hearing that, and the industry that I'm in has one of the loudest pieces of equipment. Which is a wood chipper. And it's embarrassing to me, especially when I'm in Conestee and I can hear any one of our crews in any part of Conestee with a wood chipper running. Does it exclude any type of work during the work week, during the day? So, like, my operation is shut down.
It excludes lawn maintenance.
Yeah.
change the word.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at. Noise from lawn mowers, weed trimmers, edging machines, and other similar small engine yard maintenance equipment, properly equipped according to manufacturer specifications.
Yeah, and so if you take the muffler off, it's no longer, it doesn't work. But I don't think that I fall under that classification, and I can promise you that my wood chippers, I did look it up, our average wood chipper is 115 decibels, which is extremely loud. And I'm telling you, they're extremely loud. So
intermittent.
It's just a temporary.
Well, you know, not if we're doing a big clearing job, it's not.
I mean, for development type of thing.
Or even underbrushing. We've done firewild projects where we'll have four people cutting rhododendron on the side of the road in slick rock, nonstop beating rhododendron in a wood chipper, nonstop for 8 to 10 hours. And now they'll look at us and say, you can't do this work anymore. Now we're saying we can't get firewild funding. I don't know. As you all have already said, like, how are we supposed to do this appropriately? This is a tough path to be passed with. So I'm just giving you one more thing to think about. In mind, your chainsaw is 105. And again, now a chainsaw is pretty intermittent, but the wood chipper sometimes is not that intermittent.
What I meant by intermittent was, the job's here, the job's over here. You know, they move around. And there are going to be certain things that we just simply can't examine. I mean, but construction is construction. Equipment is what it is. If it meets manufacturer standards and specifications, has all the safety equipment, you know, the spark arresters, the what do you call mufflers and all that, what are you going to do? It meets standards and specs.
Work.
So well, is he construction? Is he industry? Is he fabrication? Is he development?
He's a service provider.
It's like commercial. It's commercial.
It's a commercial.
It's a commercial operation.
Yeah, commercial service provider, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the FireWise program, now that's extremely important. We're protecting houses from wood fires. They call it, the Forest Service has the FireWise program, which helps shares with people to make their woodland around their developments and houses forest fire resistant.
Right. Yeah, that's work they appreciate.
So we jump from board member comment to public comment.
I have one more comment. Joy brought up that. currently, our email addresses are not on the website. The county commissioner's email addresses are. I would like to have, just me personally, would love to have that so that people know who to reach out to on this planning board, but I just wanted to float that out. I don't know if it's a mandatory thing. I don't know if that's the all or none. I don't know what the right protocol is, but I would be in favor of people being able to reach out to us if they want to.
I would think that it would be an all or none, being the roster or not.
Right.
Or a redacted roster. Previously, planning board members had a Transylvania County website or email.
We don't have it anymore? I thought we did.
No? I don't know.
Never email myself.
Yeah.
But you guys would have to check it.
Okay.
I have no idea how to check it.
Exactly.
I can check it from my husband's email or my other email if it goes through.
So
if it doesn't go through, it's going
to
come back.
That is a question for me to ask IT and get back to you on.
Okay. Yeah, that would be the best if we had a campaign.
Especially if it could be forwarded to your personal.
When we came on the board, I think Mark told us we did.
He did.
Yes.
But Mark is under control. I say that with love.
Okay.
No, I don't. He mentioned that, but I don't think we. I never just.
Yeah.
So, I could put your county email on the website, but then you would have to check it.
Yeah, we just need to have a login and all that.
And I have the instructions on how to log in, assuming they're active and that you have one.
Okay. Yeah, you can check on that.
Okay. Okay.
The free for all on here. Right?
At this hour.
Well, we've all had our say. Anybody want to say anything else? It was a good meeting. It went better than expected. So
this
I want to thank Beth for taking.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So much.
Just remember, all that pipe is good for your arthritis.
Oh, I'm sorry. I hope so. Well, if nobody has anything left to say, do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved. Second.
Okay, all in favor. Let's go. All right.
Good job, Sandy.
Thank you. I didn't do anything. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.